This is Carolyn Chromians, and welcome to the Quit Getting Screwed podcast, where we talk about everything related to contractors, construction, and information to help you run better businesses. Hello, and welcome back to the Quit Getting Screwed podcast, where we talk about all the ways not to get screwed in the construction industry and other helpful information. And today we're going to talk all about buying and selling businesses with the expert, JC Maldonado of BizGrow Partners. Hey, JC, how are you today?
How are you doing, Carolyn?
Oh, I'm doing good. So tell us a little bit about yourself, how long you've been in the business, what got you in the business of selling and buying businesses.
Well, originally, I went to college, studied psychology. Then I went to law school, actually, and graduated there. Kind of in between those two journeys, so to speak, I got the urge to get into my own business. My family roots are from Brooklyn, New York, then Staten Island. But no one in my family had a business background. Perhaps my roots, you know, influenced me to go into business. So while I was in college, I kind of always had an interest in business, always had an interest in free enterprise. I went to law school kind of with the notion of understanding business, contracts, law. I kind of like that side of the street. I was on track to maybe get involved in the corporate law scene. But right before, while I was in law school, as I was getting into law school, I kind of read a pamphlet from a company called International Wealth Success. And this was like I think they're even still around. They print out information on how to buy real estate with no money down and how to become wealthy and business ideas, how to get involved in the import-export business. So they had some pretty interesting publications back then. And it was just like pre-internet. The internet was around, but you didn't see people peddling information products online. So actually you ordered these pamphlets, and there was one particular publication that said that you can make money by helping people raise capital or arrange loans, commercial.
This is Carolyn Chromians, and welcome to the Quit Getting Screwed podcast, where we talk about everything related to contractors, construction, and information to help you run better businesses. Hello, and welcome back to the Quit Getting Screwed podcast, where we talk about all the ways not to get screwed in the construction industry and other helpful information. And today we're going to talk all about buying and selling businesses with the expert, JC Maldonado of BizGrow Partners. Hey, JC, how are you today?
How are you doing, Carolyn?
Oh, I'm doing good. So tell us a little bit about yourself, how long you've been in the business, what got you in the business of selling and buying businesses.
Well, originally, I went to college, studied psychology. Then I went to law school, actually, and graduated there. Kind of in between those two journeys, so to speak. I got the urge to get into my own business. My family roots are from Brooklyn, New York, then Staten Island. But no one in my family had a business background. Perhaps my roots, you know, influenced me to go into business. So while I was in college, I kind of always had an interest in business, always had an interest in free enterprise. I went to law school kind of with the notion of understanding business, contracts, law. I kind of like that side of the street. I was on track to maybe get involved in the corporate law scene. But right before, while I was in law school, as I was getting into law school, I kind of read a pamphlet from a company called International Wealth Success. And this was like I think they're even still around. They print out information on how to buy real estate with no money down and how to become wealthy and business ideas, how to get involved in the import-export business. So they had some pretty interesting publications back then. And it was just like pre-internet. The internet was around, but you didn't see people peddling information products online. So actually you ordered these pamphlets, and there was one particular publication that said that you can make money by helping people raise capital or arrange loans, commercial loans for commercial projects, and charge a commission for it. And you could even help business owners sell their business and receive a commission in representing them. And I remember the pamphlet saying, rub elbows with some of the most successful, interesting people in your community. Become, you know, well-received and develop a network, and you can make money in this way. So that interested me. So I said, well, you know, although I was interested in law, it seemed like a business that would, you know, require to interact with people. So what I did is I got business cards, started a company, and I became a Main Street business broker, representing all types of businesses, ranging from mom and pop businesses to, and then later on as my career progressed, we started to represent middle market companies, lower middle market and middle market companies for sale. But it started with my first deal was a sale of a gas station and car wash and convenience store, and sold the business at the closing. I got paid a commission, and it was an epiphany in my early 20s. So from there, about a year later, my brother got involved in the business. So we became partners and we started to develop the business. We got to the point where we had two offices with 40 full-time salespeople, 35 gotcha. Dedicated to the representing mom and pop businesses like car washers, laundromats, supermarkets, etc. And then we had another division that would represent, you know, middle market companies, manufacturers, distributors, healthcare, IT, etc. So, and that's who we were in the 2000s. Now, during that process, we generated enough resources to lend our own capital to businesses, to buyers who would want to buy middle market companies or Main Street. So, and we would lend money to the buyers, and we would arrange the business acquisition loan and get a commission. We would represent owners of businesses and get paid a commission at the time, and then we would lend our own capital to the buyers who were looking to come in. And in exchange for that, we would serve as a consultant as a condition to receiving our money. Then 08, 09 came. We lost a lot of money. We had a lot of money and lent out. So we had a portfolio of clients. Plus, we had a book of business of companies that we were representing for sale.
Very cool.
But when the market crashed, it hit a lot of the retail Main Street world hard. And it hit the middle market hard because a lot of the lenders pulled their line of credit on a lot of these businesses. So a lot of those businesses lost money, lost liquidity, and we had our money stuck in these places. And we did receive some money back, and we got paid by a very interesting segment of the marketplace. These were businesses that were not as small as the mom and pops, but they weren't as big as the middle market companies. So these were businesses doing 3 to 30 million in revenues, maybe $1 million to $2.5 million in their earnings. 10 to 100 employees, and they were usually in manufacturing or distribution or commercial business service, and even commercial subspecialty construction companies were still viable. The market had crashed, but some of them survived, were able to stay alive. So that segment of the marketplace actually paid some principal and interest back, and that kind of flushed us with a little liquidity. And then with my brother at that time, who was my partner, we decided to reinvent the company, and we became a principal buyer of those businesses that actually paid our money back. So that was around 2009, 2010, and that's who we've been since. We kind of converted ourselves from an investment banker, merchant banking type that provided those services to this underserved, Main Street and lower middle market area. Then we reinvented the company and became a principal buyer of some of those same businesses, particularly those businesses in service, distribution, manufacturing, construction, and businesses that are, you know, too small for private equity, but too big for a lot of individuals in terms of size in order to buy. So we became this niche buyer who now systematically buys businesses in that market.
So do you buy them to run them, or do you buy them for somebody else, or?
We buy them to own them. And run them. And all these businesses that we buy, the business is doing $1 million to $2.5 million in net earnings. That's like a fancy word to say profit. Mm-hmm. Those kinds of businesses, we consider them to be high performance small companies. And our goal is to buy those businesses and transform them into bona fide middle market operations. So take them from 5, 10 million to 50 million, or from, you know, 15 million to 100 million, or, you know, in terms of revenues, and then from a net earnings perspective, you know, $1 million or $2 million to $5 million to $10 million, and operate it as a middle market operation. And if the real estate's involved, we buy the real estate too. So that's what we do. And we do this by retaining the founder for at least 1 year, who runs the company on a day-to-day basis for 1 year. And then we phase him out and bring him to the board level, because oftentimes our deals involves the founders retaining an interest in the business. And then after year one, we pretty much replace the founder with an executive team by either promoting from within or by recruiting outside talent.
I'm a business owner, and this sounds like almost an impossible task from somebody on the inside who's trying to do that with their business, but you make it sound so easy.
Because it is.
And I guess
maybe that's from my perspective, but you're right. It's to point out that the complexity of the endeavor, but.
No, I agree. That's what makes you the expert at what you do. So how is acquiring business related to building wealth? Or how can it be?
Well, I like buying businesses because they produce cash flow and the valuation could spiral upward at a faster pace than other asset classes. So these businesses, for instance, that we're buying that produce $1 million to $2 million in their earnings, those businesses are going to usually trade for some sort of multiple of earnings, 3 times, 4 times, 5 times. That's how kind of they get valued. So when you're a buyer, you usually pay a multiple of earnings to come up with a price. The beautiful thing is that if you increase those earnings and you build earnings, you know, beyond 5 million, beyond 10 million, the multiple actually goes higher because at that point there are buyers, public companies and private equity groups and other types of buyers that'll pay more for a business that is performing at a certain level. So what I like about what businesses with regard to wealth building is that the appreciation of the asset could skyrocket if you do the right job. Plus, you have control of the performance because as an owner, you're responsible for the results of that, of the performance of the asset. So that's why, and that along with the fact that it produces a lot of cash flow.
So if it produces all that revenue, do you get paid as a shareholder?
Well, I partner with entrepreneurs to buy companies. So I don't have a fund. But I do raise capital. So I'm not using my own money strictly. I'm typically, I'm not investing per se. I procure the deal, put it together, arrange the third party financing, and then I bring in a partner in each deal. And that partner usually will sign on a business acquisition loan of some sort and sit on the board of directors and become a partner in that acquisition. That's typically what I
Gotcha. And so for like that person in that position, do they get paid like as a salary as running the business? Do they get paid dividends?
So my company gets a management fee.
Okay.
And then we get a part of the, you know, anywhere between 30 and 50% ownership of the business. And our partner receives a percentage ownership of the business. And then depending on who puts up money in terms of fulfilling the down payment requirement, usually there's a down payment requirement on each deal. Whoever puts up money, you know, we'll get a straight line return on the capital and then we'll split distributions along the way. And our goal is to hold the business long term because I'm buying businesses that are typically not, they're not going to be displaced by technology. They're typically essential businesses. And I know that's the COVID term, but the businesses, the manufacturers, the distributors, the subspecialty construction companies, the business service companies, a lot of them were deemed essential during COVID. So I didn't use the term back then, but
it's essential business.
COVID gave us a new term and it's a marketing term. So basically, I buy essential businesses that are essential to the infrastructure of the United States in these areas. So they're not going to be displaced. So there's no reason to sell them actually. All we got to do is continue to grow the business and the value skyrockets upward. So that's the advantage of this particular asset class. So we're long-term holders and we build wealth and we build and we grow the earnings of the business. We make money along the way. And then, you know, when you have assets on the books, you know, that in a portfolio, it gives you options. You don't necessarily need to sell anything in order to get access to cash when you have that kind of portfolio.
So that's how you achieve wealth through business acquisitions.
Business acquisitions and establishing management teams in each business that we buy. A lot of times the management team kind of exists already when we buy the business, but we could also recruit outside talent and we establish an executive team that runs the business on behalf of ownership.
Gotcha.
And then I establish a board of directors, typically with whoever I'm partnering with, along with the founder. If the founder retains an interest in the business, and I establish a board of directors, which is, and the board is just a fancy word of saying ownership, right? So I establish an ownership group that supports the executive management team. So the executive management team is responsible for the day-to-day, but the board of directors is responsible for creating the strategic direction of the business. They're responsible for providing top-line management support. They're responsible for providing capital support, business planning support. And we also sign the players. We bring in the talent that's needed so that the business can function on group intelligence as opposed to just relying on a founder. Because there's a limitation that the business has if everything is, all the intelligence built within the business stems from the founder. So we're bringing in group intelligence that enables us as a team to create more firepower. So that's that. And the key, this, by the way, the establishment of the executive team and the establishment of a competent ownership group, that is what we call the separation of church and state, which is one of the wealth principles that we teach, which is that if you as the owner is running the business day to day and is also self-financing the business, there's going to be a limitation in the amount of wealth you could create, and there's going to be a limitation in terms of the amount of value you can create. So what we preach is you've got to separate church and state, which in our vernacular means separate ownership and management. So ownership is responsible for the strategic direction of the business, and management is responsible for working and running the business day to day.
So is this something that all businesses should consider, like this wealth through acquisition as a growth strategy?
Well, it really depends on what your goal is. So if your goal is wealth building, then I think it's detrimental to be running the companies that you own.
I'm very much in the business, right? And I'm thinking that sounds great, but like, what do you tell people that come to you like, I don't even know how to do that? Or, you run businesses, you get into it, and especially as a business owner whose whole life is involved. How do you reassure them that, I think that's probably what a lot of businesses fail or whatever is because they won't pull back and give control to somebody else. Do you have any like specialties on talking to business owners that way, or how do you get them on board to do all this?
Well, a lot of successful business owners are control freaks and they want to control everything. So they just have a mentality of controlling everything because that's what kind of got them to the first level of success, which is to build a successful business. So a small business needs tight management. It needs lean management because in order to survive in the small business arena, you have to be able to work with finite resources. So what entrepreneurs learn how to do is to preserve their resources and operate lean and mean and be able to be in control of every single detail of the business that, because in the early stages, a business could be very vulnerable. That's why, 9 out of 10 businesses fail? Mm-hmm. So the founder has to be competent. He has to be a competent executive. So one of the survival skills that you develop is you learn how to be a control freak, because you know that if you don't have every detail down, you're probably going to fail, especially in those early stages. The problem with that is the survival skill that you develop in order to get to that first level of success is the same skill that could hurt you in building wealth, because as the business grows, the business is going to have a need for intelligence that is diverse. They need diversified intelligence. And the owner, who's a control freak, would then at that point have to relinquish some control of the business in order to bring that intelligence to the table, or he has to pay a lot of money for that intelligence. So what happens is these owners who are successful and kind of get, they don't become prey to the normal scenario, right, which is failure. 9 out of 10 businesses fail. So instead, they become this control freak, survive, and maybe even get themselves to making $1 million or $2 million a year in income. So they become part of the 1-5% part of the income earning bracket in the United States. However, if by not bringing in other forms of intelligence, that actually limits the business to a certain level of performance. So if your goal is income, And if your goal is to, you know, let me own the business for 20, 30 years, and then when I sell it, I'll have even an additional amount of money that I can take from it, in addition to the income I made along the way, then buying companies for wealth purposes strictly may not make sense.
How does acquisitions help an owner in construction?
Think about what the most cherished commodity in construction is right now.
Labor, cash, all of the above.
Yeah. Cash and labor. So acquisitions is a great way to procure talent. And in construction, you can't have enough of it. You need your estimators. You need your project managers, your superintendents, your foremen. You need management to kind of oversee all this, right? So when you do an acquisition, think about what you get. You get a whole labor crew, and you get control of a labor force. So acquisitions and construction is actually a very good idea, because a lot of construction owners don't even try to make acquisitions. So you don't have a lot of competition. And then most buyers outside the realm of construction are certainly not going to feel comfortable with construction, because construction is not one of those businesses that newcomers like to buy.
Right? Why is that?
The barriers of entry. There's a barrier of entry in construction. You really have to make it your career in order to eventually get involved in the business. So there's barriers to entry and there's fear. So I think for someone in the construction arena who wants to actually buy businesses, this would be a great opportunity, because you're not really going to have as much competition, because most people, even if they think about acquisitions, are probably not going to be able to execute in this realm. So
that's the next question. So should they focus on growing their business through acquisition, or should a person consider acquisitions outside of their field of expertise?
Well, if you're going to build wealth, then you probably shouldn't really buy something that's within the realm of your trade background or your professional background. Because remember, if you're a business owner, you've succeeded in your trade, you're probably a control freak. You're going to buy a business in your realm, you're going to go back to your old habits of being a control freak and trying to control everything. But when you buy a business that is outside your realm, it forces you to learn the business and rely on people who are smarter than you in the trade. And that's what leadership's about. Surround people that have skills that you don't have. But it's an uncomfortable feeling to lead a group of people who might be smarter than you in the trade. So that'll make you a better, entrepreneur, a board level entrepreneur, meaning, you know, you're buying a business that you're not necessarily going to run day to day, but you're going to be a part of the board, and you're going to be helping operate the top line management intelligence that the business needs in order to grow.
So you're looking at the business side of business, right? You know, and actually just running the business, which, you know, like when people start out, they start out in business, in my, you know, most people I know, because they love what they do. And it's very fast. They're removed from that role and they're running a business. And they become really good at it out of necessity, like you've said.
Yeah, if you're running the business, you own it and you're running it. What you've done is you've developed a business that's completely dependent on you. So that reduces the value of the business, one, but more importantly, it puts more pressure on the business owner. So that's why the best approach is to build an executive team that runs the business without you, and then you provide top line management support to that team. And then the next level after that would be to establish a group of partners, bring in other partners with a diverse level of skill sets, so that the ownership group has skill sets necessary to take the business to the next level. So that's where I mean about group intelligence. So I think you asked the question before, why a little easier said than done. And yes, if you start the business from scratch and then you're that control freak that I'm talking about, it's very difficult to break that chain, so to speak, break that pattern. And then all of a sudden get to the point where you're going to establish a board, et cetera.
So once you're at that board ownership level, like, are you involved daily, monthly, weekly, just generally? How often are you involved?
Well, if you establish a board level team, then the group will be typically involved in terms of owning the supporting the executive team. But usually it would be a smart thing to do if you bought a business and you weren't running it. It would be a good thing to have weekly management meetings to go over key performance indicators and key metrics that tell you a little bit about how the business is performing. You do monthly board meetings, so to kind of discuss important topics of the business. You have quarterly planning sessions and annual planning sessions that kind of help, you know, get the team together and try to help conceptualize the whole planning component to it. I think you have to have a business plan. I think you have to have a standard operational procedural manual. You could bring in consultants. You bring in talent to come in and help your team. You can establish executive training programs for the team itself. So you see what I mean? There's it's very possible, but you have to do, you know, being an owner takes work. But you're in the brains part of the business. You're not in the labor part of the business.
So what are some characteristics of a business that would be worth acquiring? What do you look for when you're looking at businesses to buy them?
The quality of the founder. When you buy business, you're buying people. I want the quality of the founder and the key management. Right, that's really what you're getting. You're getting the people. That's essentially what's happening. You're buying people. Now, there's cash flow that comes along with that, so there's a numbers component. But my determination to buy a company is all depends on the people and whether they're reasonable. And what I'm also trying to avoid is a greedy owner. I don't want an owner who just wants to sell for money strictly. I want an owner who's believes in his legacy and wants to preserve it. I want an owner who believes in his people and want to give them opportunities. Maybe there's some family relatives in the business. The owner cares about them too. If you only think about the money, then you're really disregarding the people, because it's, you know, usually the highest bidder is going to come in and change the business, right? They're going to change things around. They have to justify the higher acquisition costs. So they're going to be more apt to kind of change things around and try to see if they could squeak out the highest return possible. It's all about dollars and cents, right? So they're not going to really be paying too much attention to the people aspect of it as much. But the way we kind of look at it is if you're going to build the business to the next level, we have to retain the current intelligence, work with the current team so that we can kind of take the business to the next level.
And how do you determine that? How to get to know if a business has those characteristics or not? I'm just curious.
Well, remember, it's the owner. Now, there are some qualities I'd like to see from the business, but that I think everybody would like to see from a business if they want to buy it. You know, I want to see quality earnings. I want to see consistent revenue. I want to have a customer base that's reliable and that's been coming back to that business for a period of time. I want the books and records to be clean. I want the business to be free of any legal problems or litigation, etc. I want the licensing process to be somewhat straightforward, or at least we have an answer to try to solve that problem. So I want an overall clean, financially healthy business with a reasonable valuation. But my number one determination is the quality of the founder, the management team, and whether they're willing to take some risks themselves. So I would never buy a business where the seller does not finance a portion of the business. My preference would be for him to be a 10 to 20% partner. That means they would basically finance about 10 to 20% of the purchase in the form of equity, meaning they're going to just retain an ownership stake in the business. That's always my preference. And then I'd like maybe someone in management to step up and put some money up or sign on a business acquisition loan or be willing to participate in a lucrative bonus program that has a lot of upside to it, but not as much front-end cost. I want something where there's some skin in the game. And that's what makes determination whether I think I buy a business or not.
And so that kind of answers my next question, is how important is the seller to once you've bought the business? Well, I mean, I guess on the front end they're that important, but once the transaction is already complete, how often or how important is keeping the seller on board?
I'll keep the seller on board forever. I don't want the seller to leave. What I'm trying to do is change the seller's role in the business from a primary executive day-to-day operator to someone at the board level who can provide strategic intelligence and trade expertise that's going to be necessary for us as a board to utilize in the growth of the business. Plus, the founder typically has a lot of relationships that we certainly want to retain, and we certainly want to build and expand our relationship base with the founder kind of being, you know, a source of credibility for us. So a lot of buyers are trying to get the seller out of the business, right? They buy a business and try to get the seller out. I think that's a big mistake. I think that's a huge mistake, by the way. It's the other way around. Your risk is mitigated by to the degree that you could retain the founder and have them somewhat involved.
And have an interest as well.
Now, it doesn't work that way. I mean, that doesn't mean I don't buy the business, but that's always a preference to have some level of, some level of skin in the game, so to speak, because that's how you make a deal that's fair and that's how you protect yourself from risk.
Absolutely. So how do you get the money to buy a business?
Well, you can use your money and then use third-party lenders. The SBA has a great program, so that's a good source of money. Of course, if you're going to buy a bigger business, like a middle market company, then there's a whole range of middle market business acquisition lenders that'll lend money. But that's for larger transactions. But I would say for any deal that's lower than $10 million in purchase price, the 7A SBA program would be the best. Now the SBA is not a direct lender, so you have to find an SBA lender who is pretty aggressive when it comes to business acquisitions. There's about a handful of them in the country that are aggressively lending money, but they're using it within the scope of the SBA 7A program. So the SBA guarantees like 75% of the loan principal of these loans. Wow. So they incentivize these lenders to make these kinds of deals.
So
in addition to that, you either have, usually there's a down payment requirement between 5% and 10%, depending on how much you can get the seller to hold back. So if say you buy a business, if you have the resources, you can put money up. But you could always take on a partner. You can always raise the money. You have a good deal. You want to talk to people in your community and certainly talk to them about putting up money. You can talk to them about coming on the loan with you. So there's lots of ways to get a hold of money. But I would say your professional network combined with these SBA lenders would be a primary source to get money.
And so what kind of, advisors or people would you need to help do this acquisition, make sure it's done properly and ends up successfully?
Well, first things first, if you're going to do this alone, you better know what you're doing. If not, you're better off partnering with someone who's bought a lot of businesses. And you got to be honest with yourself. If you're a business owner, you've never made an acquisition before, or maybe you've made one, you're not an expert. I would say even if you bought five companies, you're not anywhere close to being an expert. So if you don't have experience, your experience is limited. One way you can mitigate risk is simply partner with someone who's actually experienced with acquisitions. So that would be, one main thing to consider. Two, if you're going to do it on your own, you better know what you're doing. You better study this craft, understand every single nuance and how to make business acquisitions, how to finance them, how to do due diligence, how to create value post-transaction, how to identify problems in the executive team. I mean, the accounting part, everything from the accounting part, the finance part, the contract, know everything there is to know about contracts in this arena. If the business owner is not prepared to put in the work to learn this space, to learn the craft, there's no advisory team that's going to protect you from yourself.
That's like, so what can go wrong if they try to do it on their own?
Well, one or two things can happen. I've seen one or two things happen. You have a personality who doesn't have enough, who simply does not pay attention to any of their advisors because they think they're smarter than everybody. So they may have an advisory team, but they're just a bunch of puppets. And they don't take any advice from them, even though they may know, they may need them. Or you have the opposite. You have you could become hostage to your advisors. So other buyers, they just become hostages. So they won't pull the trigger unless their attorney says so. They won't pull the trigger unless their accountant is happy. They generally get influenced very easily, and it's hard for them to pull a trigger on a deal. So those are the two things I see typically when a business owner doesn't put in the work. If you want to acquire businesses, you either have to put in the work or partner. If you're not prepared to do one of those two, then don't buy a business. It's that simple as that. Now, you talked about the team. Assuming you did put in the work, and now you have general knowledge in five or six different areas that are important, then I think you got to get a good M&A advisor or a business broker that can help you source deals. So I think it's got to be a business broker with experience. A business broker that's not a high-pressure salesperson either. It's got to be someone who has a long-term vision to help you. Someone who has good financial acumen, someone who's accurate, someone who can kind of put you on the right path, someone who can help establish or at least understand your business acquisition criteria. So a good investment banker, a good M&A advisor, a good business broker, they call them different things, but depending on the size of the transaction. So if it's a smaller business, they're called business brokers. If it's a business in the lower middle market or the kind of the space that I buy in, you know, they call them M&A advisors. And then if it's in the middle market, like companies doing 10 million plus in net earnings, you know, and, you know, $100 million, $50 million, $200 million in revenues, you know, that kind of business, that's the middle market, and they usually call them investment bankers. So, but to find one and have one on your team or someone that you have a good comfort level with, and I think certainly that's that would be step number one. Then I think on top of that, you'd need an accountant that can, particularly an accountant that has a good, strong business valuation background. And then someone who has a good forensic background too could also be equally as effective. And you want that accountant to be able to just really financially scrutinize the business, all its financial information. So that's really what I want from that kind of accountant. I don't need that person to tell me what to do. I just need them. I need them to help me verify the numbers representations of the business. So that's that. And then an attorney that is proficient with contracts, an attorney who's a deal maker and a problem solver. And that, you know, we know there's always problems, but the attorney should be to be value added and coming up with solutions. And that's probably going to be one of your biggest expenses. But it's a worthwhile the investment if the attorney knows what they're doing. I also think that having the attorney to be administratively sound is very important. I think it's important that attorney has a paralegal or has an office or office support so that the documents that are being drafted back and forth, you know, are done in an efficient manner. So I would look for that. And then I would look for someone you can trust who knows your goals and give them some incentive to help you close out the deal, because there's a lot of work on the back end that attorneys do that are not only involve legal advice, but also involve the administrative components. As you know, a lot of paperwork on deals. So that's
absolutely.
So I'd say those are your three main areas. You know, if you're buying the real estate, having a real estate appraisal company is good. And then if you buy real estate, having an engineering company, a company that does phase one or phase two analysis, that's good. If some business owners I've seen utilize business consultants to kind of help from the jump, whether the business is viable or not, what the growth plan would be. So yeah, so I think surrounding yourself with the right advisory team is good, but that will not replace the work that's needed to do your homework and you become proficient in these areas.
Absolutely. And so how do you find businesses that are for sale?
I would say through the M&A advisory community. It's just easier when a seller just makes the emotional decision to sell, and that they kind of go through the process and educate themselves. And I think it's important that they make that emotional decision as opposed to me trying to buy direct from them. So my preference is to have some sort of business intermediary involved. And that's where I source most of my deals, from that whole community. And it's pretty, not a large community, but it's a niche community. So that would be one way to do it. And then I think networking with attorneys, accountants, associations, other like consultant types, those are good ways to source deals too as well.
And so once you decide you're going to do this and you set up this, how long does it normally take from like once you have a buyer that's interested to the time that the sale actually is done?
Oh, if someone's selling, it could take a year or two to sell the business.
Really?
So there's a lot of work involved that's administrative, from accounting to banking to legal. It's the whole transaction is laborious.
So how is business for you, though? I'm just kind of curious. Is it this a good time to be in the buying business? Like if this was, you know, is this a good time to do it or should you wait? Is it a better time than now, or I'm kind of curious.
I look at it like it doesn't matter what the environment right now. I think we're in a recession. But I think they're just, I don't believe the media. I don't believe anything I'm hearing. I think the environment is all screwed up. The inflation is out of control. The cost of materials is out of control. We have a major labor crisis in the country right now that's been kind of brewing since the mid-2000s, but it's getting worse every year, particularly spaces like construction and trucking, logistics, warehousing, manufacturing, agriculture. I mean, and of course, the whole hospitality space. It's just labor is just, you know, a major issue right now. So given the cost of labor and its scarcity, given the supply chain issues you see, the fact that now there's a war, interest rates have just creeped up a little bit. Stock market has not been doing well recently. Wages are somehow down in an arena that costs are up. I don't even know how that's happened. Yeah. You have a considerable amount of Americans who just don't want to work. I think all of this is a sign that we're in a recession. And so, yeah, I would say the economic climate is difficult. Now, the great thing is if you buy a business now and you structure it in a careful manner, you can have something long range that's going to perform well, because at least if you buy a business and it's performed in this environment, I would say that asset's pretty durable because it's not an easy environment. So I think it's a good time to buy. My portfolio, I have 22 companies. The portfolio is doing pretty well despite some of the challenges. But that's because I buy the types of businesses that are not going to be displaced or are not going to be put out of business because there's a bad market. I'd like to buy businesses that are durable, that I can build and hold for the long haul. So I would say you got to be careful what kind of business you buy in this market. And I would focus on businesses that are essential to the infrastructure in the United States, because the United States has infrastructure problems, and it's only and they're going to have to address some of those infrastructure problems in the next 10 to 20 years. So.
And we just had that huge infrastructure bill too.
That's true. And it's not going to be the first, and it's probably going to be the first of many.
Yeah, I agree. So, okay. So if somebody wanted to learn more about buying or selling businesses, how would they get a hold of you? Where can they find your contact information? How can they contact you directly?
My email address is jc@bizgrowpartners.com. So that's BIZGRO partners with an S in one word, bizgrowpartners.com.
And we'll put all this in the show notes, so somebody wants to reach out to you directly and has more questions, or, you know, and wants to get to know a little bit more about it, they can reach out to you directly. But I appreciate you giving all this information, because this is kind of something that's not very familiar to me, you know, as a business owner / runner. But the idea is very dreamy.
And why is that?
Just because, I guess you get so far into your business, especially at this point, is like, what do I want to do? I'm trying to grow this every day. Is that really where I want to go? What is my end goal?
Well, yeah. I think for most business owners, the frightening thing is losing control, but they actually gain control by developing a team that runs the business on their behalf day to day. So that's one of the things that we believe is critical for wealth building. So I think you asked, how's wealth building and business acquisitions related? It's the opportunity to establish the separation of church and state from day one, separating management and ownership just day one. Whereas it's hard when you start a business and you were the primary executive that kind of built the business, and if that business is related to your professional trade and expertise, then it's hard to kind of separate church and state, because remember that survival instinct of being a control freak would probably work against
you. Absolutely. I feel the same thing. It's like, I know where I'm going, but it'd probably be helpful to have outside opinions on it as well. So.
I knew an attorney years back, and he had like 50 attorneys working for him. And he had a whole law firm, and their specialty was, they did a lot of lobbying, and they also, and they did a lot of transaction real estate stuff. But he was also a real estate developer. So his core business was real estate development. Yeah, he had this law firm with 50 attorneys. He was a partner in the firm, and he founded the firm. And I think he had two other partners. And then they had 50 attorneys working for them. So it was three partners at the time having 50 attorneys working for them. And they would cover all types of areas of law. They had divisions. So that was so that's an example of having a team. And he didn't run the practice at all. He created a tremendous amount of relationships through his other business and through his efforts to, you know, network with politicians. But he did build a business where he was not running it day to day. And that's a law firm. And I think probably what he did was harder than, it's probably harder to do that in your profession than it is to do it in construction. Just because of the nature of the specialization of being a lawyer and entails, right?
Especially in construction, right? Because I get all the attorneys all day long, but then I got to teach them on the construction side, right? And then, you know.
Yeah, sure. Although you have a nice niche. You have I think you did great just carving out a niche in this particular space.
Thank you. All right. Well, thank you so much for being on the podcast, JC. I appreciate it.
Appreciate it.
Awesome. We'll see you again next time on the Quit Getting Screwed podcast.
All right. Thanks.
Thanks.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Quit Getting Screwed. I hope you found it helpful. If you like what you hear, please like us and follow our podcast. If you want further information, you can find us at subcontractorinstitute.com. We're also on Facebook, LinkedIn, and Instagram. And the book is available on Amazon. Thank you.